It has been established that persons who have recently died have been returning to life and committing acts of murder.
Believe in ghosts?
First simply disappears, the other two died.
Hello, hello, my pretties. It's your host, Ashley Lana, your certified nightmare prescriber. And I'm back. You're back. We're all back. It's a big backfest. And whoa. Yeah, I won't be saying that again. Blessings upon everyone who enjoys the show. And thank you so much for leaving awesome reviews and for reaching out. It truly means a lot to me. And our fear cult is growing, so welcome everyone who is new to this dark dissection of crime and horror. So with that being said, welcome to Lullaby. Last episode, we explored the mind of Catherine Knight, the butcher of Aberdeen, Australia. She murdered her boyfriend and skinned his body. She cooked it, she served it to his children with some vegetables, and it was just gross. Just a mess. And tonight, we're going macabre. So, Netflix released the 2022 Texas Chainsaw Massacre reboot, so I thought I'd ask you, the Fear Cult, on social media if you wanted me to do a popular case, Edward Gein. If you don't know who he is, ooh, I'm so excited for you! You're gonna leave fucked up! I shouldn't say that. I apologize. But yes, it is a popular true crime case, and here's why I want to do it. It's fucking crazy, and I want you to have a deeper understanding of Ed Gein once you're finished the episode. So the dark psychology reveals Ed's life was cursed from the start, and his mind is a deep pool, and I wanted to just drown in this madness, okay? So let's experience the man whose crimes inspired multiple fictional characters in cinematic history. So, get comfortable, because sweet dreams are made of these. The following story contains subject matter involving graphic descriptions of mental illness, necrophilia, and murder. Please take into consideration that some topics may be disturbing for some listeners. Listener discretion is advised. The older woman sat in her rocking chair by the light of the kerosene lamp on the side table. With a pleased smile on her face, she reached over to grab the tattered copy of the Old Testament. As she opened the book, the spine crackled, and the sound of the pages began to flip. She went to her favorite Bible passage. Her eyes then looked over the pages to see her beloved, perfect son, sitting on the floor with his legs crossed. His face eagerly awaited her voice to speak the words of God, because to him, she was God, the only perfect woman on the earth.
Now, my son, I shall read you my favorite passage. Pay attention, for it will strengthen you when you too age. O Lord, rebuke me not in thine anger, neither chasten me in hot displeasure. Have mercy upon me, O Lord, for I am weak. O Lord, heal me, for my bones are vexed. My soul is also sore vexed. But thou, O Lord, how long? Return, O Lord, deliver my soul. O, save me, thy Lord's mercy's sake. For in death there is no remembrance of thee. In the grave who shall give thee thanks?
The older woman read Bible passages daily. They were rituals in the Gein household. It was the only safe place without female whores to corrupt her son. She put the book aside and seen the wide loving eyes of her son stare back at her. She reached out and gently placed her hand on the side of his face.
You will grow up and be nothing like your miserable, lazy father. You will be the perfect man, the only perfect man, and I will never leave you. I will be the only person to ever love you, my son. No one else can love you like a mother can. I will never leave you, Edward Gein.
This is the morbid true story of Edward Gein, the Butcher of Plainfield, and the inspiration for the real Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Edward Theodore Gein was born August 26, 1906, in La Crosse, Wisconsin, United States. He was the youngest of two sons. His older brother Henry was born in 1901. His parents, George and Augusta Gein, were deeply religious and had a spiteful marriage. The contempt Augusta had for her alcoholic husband made life at home very turbulent. It was only because of the couple's religious beliefs did they never get divorced. Since George suffered severe alcoholism and couldn't hold a job, Augusta took it upon herself to financially support the family. While her sons, Henry and Edward, enjoyed being in town with other families, Augusta did not like the possibility of outside influences affecting her children. Augusta was working at a small, successful local grocery store that the family owned. In 1913, when Edward was only 7 years old, he was playing at the family store. At the back of the store, there was a window, which his parents told him to never look through. He heard a blood-curdling sound that he didn't recognize. Sneaking towards the back window, he peered through and seen his father slaughtering a pig that was strung up. Standing in front was his mother removing the entrails from the animal. The sight was too much for Edward, and he realized that he should not have looked, as his parents had always told him. He made a sound of shock and caught the attention of his parents. His mother, Augusta, then lectured him for hours that entire night. In 1914, Augusta sold the store to move the family to a quaint 195-acre farm in Plainfield, Wisconsin. This was Augusta's way of raising her sons. She was influenced by her hatred for her husband, George, and religion. She enforced strict rules that she expected her sons to abide by, since their father lacked any parental authority. Henry Gein, the oldest of the sons, grew up content and sensible. He did not agree with Augusta's religious reign on the family, and they argued quite frequently. The younger of the boys, Edward, adored his mother, and he seen her as the perfect mother. In turn, Augusta began focusing her parenting to shape Edward into her version of the perfect, puritanical son. Almost immediately, Augusta prevented her sons from ever leaving the property, unless it was to go to school. She preached how evil the world was, and people on the outside only wanted to corrupt them. She did not want them making friends in school and hanging around with anyone except for her. When Edward would come home to tell his mother about how excited he was to have talked to a new classmate, she would sit him down and begin telling him how people, no matter their age, are in this world to corrupt you. It started as a quiet lecture and always ended with her yelling, screaming at her children. The community knew how controlling Augusta Gein was. Because of this, Edward became the target of cruel bullying. On Edward's left eyelid, he had a non-malignant growth that caused his eye to droop, and for that, he was picked on. He also had a lesion on his tongue that caused him to have a mild speech defect, as well as a stammer. Edward would come home crying from kids making fun of him, and his alcoholic father would repeatedly physically beat him, smacking him in the head and banging his ears until they rang, just because he couldn't man up and take it. Augusta Gein would then begin physically smacking her husband, and he would smack back, leaving Edward Gein crying in the corner all night until his mother came to rescue him. Classmates of Edward described how he was shy, but would randomly burst into maniacal fits of hysteria of laughing with no triggers. He lacked social skills and detached from society completely. Edward did not have bad grades in school at all. He was, in fact, a fantastic reader, and he loved books. When Edward was 13, 14 years old, he dropped out of school and stayed home with his mother, rarely leaving the property, enjoying her presence. He adored his mother, sitting next to her while she read the Bible to him, explaining the cruelty of the planet, the atrocities of man, and how she was the only pure soul in the world. She preached how he could never be anything like his neglectful father. A truly defining moment in Edward's life was one of his first memories. As a young child, he almost fell down the stairs, and his mother reached out and grabbed his arm. She pulled him in close and began lecturing him. Once she was finished, she told him, quote, "Only a mother could love you." This neurologically associated his mother as his one and only true protector in this world. it's always the mothers. Okay, well, not all the time, but more often than not, it's always the goddamn mothers. So let's examine the unhealthy relationship Edward had with his mother. So it is the relationship that inspired the novel Psycho, which is a classic. Please watch it if you have not. Edward Gein idolized his mother, and I cannot emphasize this enough. He was quoted with calling her a saint, and it was because of this he spent most of his time clinging to her every move. They were pretty much inseparable. And let it be known that his mother, Augusta, she was not a saint. Not by any means in the world was she a saint. She was described by others as dominating, overbearing, stubborn, and abusive. And she would actually beat her sons. If they wanted to make friends, she would beat their asses. She was pretty awful. And because children are very impressionable, Edward absorbed everything that his mother told him. And children tend not to question their parents' thinking because they usually believe it's out of their best interest. And so due to Augusta being very manipulating, she purposely isolated her children from the outside world inside their home in the middle of nowhere and preached to her sons that she was just protecting them. And this definitely would have influenced Edward's attachment to her. She was his best and only friend, and plus this wonderful, wonderful, beautiful woman taught him that all women, so that includes us ladies, we are all whores, harlots, sinners, and want to corrupt the entire world. I mean, she actually really, she was ahead of her time. She really figured us out. Am I right, ladies? Oh, she was insane. So she was quoted with saying, women are the instruments of the devil, and that sex is a sin, it's immoral, and evil, which is why her sons needed to be virgins for the rest of their life. She had a terrible sex life with her husband, I can only assume, because she told her sons that sex, if it was meant to be enjoyable, then God would have made it pleasurable. I don't know what kind of sex George was giving her, but it wasn't great. First you don't succeed, try again. But she really did not like George, and from what I could tell, she only had sex a handful of times, and that was just to have her sons, because she couldn't stand just living in the same house with her husband, and yet she couldn't divorce him. So she popped out a couple of kids, and then she started preaching the ways of females being awful and her being fantastic. I took a couple days to read the biographical novel Deviant, The Shocking True Story of Edward Gein, and good book, I recommend it. And Augusta wasn't an ignorant woman by any means. She understood exactly what she was doing to her sons, and there were multiple accounts online describing how oppressed Edward and his brother were. And it said online that in 1918, when Edward was 12 years old, Augusta caught him masturbating in the bathtub. And then she grabbed him by the genitals and squeezed them hard, saying, quote, the curse of man. Now, in the book Deviant, it's explained that Augusta actually promoted masturbation in the household. So I cross-confirmed the documents, and I found that she did promote masturbation. And it makes complete sense as to why she would, as a controlling manipulation technique. Here's what I can take away from the timeline, and it makes sense to the whole confusion. Augusta taught her sons that sex was only used to procreate, and every woman is evil, except for her, of course, so they were never to ever have sex. When she witnessed Ed masturbating at 12 years old, she probably realized that completely oppressing her son sexually was only gonna make things worse. So she allowed them to masturbate, and it was proven documented that Augusta actually, wait for it, she taught her sons how to masturbate. Strange, I know. So there is no accounts of physical incest in the family, so I don't believe that she actually physically was like, here, give me that thing, and then showed them how to do it. That was really awkward for me to even just insinuate, but I don't believe that she did that. I believe it was probably a step-by-step process through a door. I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt. I'm truly hoping she was not in front of them when it happened. Good God. However, since Augusta always degraded the sexual urges of men and the promiscuity of women, Edward grows up to become obsessed with the thought of sex. Let's continue. On April 1st, 1940, George Gein, Edward's father, at 66 years old, died of a heart attack. It was a result of his drinking. Edward was now 34 years old. He still lived at the farm with his brother Henry and his mother Augusta. The older the brothers got was only a catalyst for the religious lessons given by their mother. The boys took odd jobs to help support the family. Edward worked as a babysitter, and he loved the company of children because they were easier to relate to. And the children absolutely loved him. Both Edward and Henry Gein were considered trustworthy and reliable by the townspeople. In April of 1944, when Edward was 38 years old, his brother Henry, not sharing Edward's worship of their mother, began to openly criticize her. He was worried about the unhealthy attachment Edward had towards his mother, and this shocked and mortified Edward. Not a month had passed, and the brothers were fighting a fire that broke out in the brushland on their farm. Edward then got separated from Henry and continued fighting the runaway fire. Once it was over, darkness had already set in, and he couldn't locate his older brother. He then went into town to get the authorities. Edward then led the police to the exact location of his 43-year-old dead brother. Located on the back of Henry's head were blunt force trauma marks. The medical examiner concluded that the cause of death was cardiac arrest and fell and hit his head on a rock. The police suspected foul play but never believed that meek Edward Gein could bring harm to anyone. It was known that he did not like violence and did not go out during hunting season in Wisconsin. He avoided it. Or do you think he killed his brother? It is known that Edward had no issues killing small animals like rabbits or birds. It was the volume of blood in larger animals that affected him. Edward recalled fainting at the sight of large amounts of blood. Still, Edward's body had no gaping wounds. It makes sense that this event happened within a month Henry criticized Edward's relationship with their mother, the woman that Edward worshipped. Near the end of 1944, Augusta Gein was hospitalized after surviving a stroke at the age of 67. Edward diligently cared for his mother. He even crawled into bed with her at night and would read her the Bible while stroking her hair. In 1945, when Edward was 39 years old, he started reading books about the human anatomy, cemeteries, and head shrinking. He developed a particular fascination with the human testing at Nazi concentration camps and their skin collecting. It was a chilly December day in Plainfield. Edward had the plan to drive to a neighboring farm of a man named Bill Smith to purchase hay for the farm. Augusta, who was still recovering from her first stroke, did not want her son to make a transaction by himself, so she went with him. When the two arrived, they witnessed Bill Smith beating a dog to death on the front lawn. He was in a heated argument with a woman who had been standing on the porch. The two had been having a sexual relationship. Augusta then referred to her as a harlot. Augusta spent the following days on a tangent describing the atrocities of the sinful whore who had been arguing with Bill Smith at his farm. The built-up stress took a toll on her recovery. And on December 29th that same year, Augusta Gein suffered another stroke and died. This broke Edward. He boarded up her bedroom and the living room area to preserve it like a museum. It was never reopened until the day he was arrested. Edward began hoarding and putting sheets everywhere over the windows. Papers were thrown around, mattresses were half off the bed frames, and dishes were just scattered everywhere. His mother was the only person who he was dependent on. Now that she was gone, an immense loneliness took control over his life. When Henry died, Augusta was absolutely devastated, and Edward seemed to relish in the fact that he was now the only male figure in his mother's life. And because of Augusta's dominating and oppressive parenting, it seemed to actually stunt his mental development, and it left 39-year-old Edward with a teenager-like mindset. In the town of Plainfield, he was regarded as a very kind and respectful man in the community. I couldn't find anything where the community members were talking badly about him. He was very kind, he was very respectful, he was quiet, but he would engage in conversations, especially now that his mother was gone. He didn't feel this weird guilt about being nice to people who engaged with him in conversations. He was just a simple-minded man, and he was very polite, and people did have respect for him. So after the death of his mother, he fell into a long-term isolation and he developed schizophrenia. Now this led to him having visions, and he claimed to see human faces in the leaves on trees and that they would laugh at him. And he also claimed to have seen hundreds of vultures covered in blood and playing with internal organs that would appear above him in the skies and in trees. And then at night he would claim that he started hearing his mother's voice speaking to him, and it would yell at him while he was falling asleep. As for the vultures and the leaves laughing at him, that's schizophrenia. Now, with the mother speaking to him, it's most likely schizophrenia, but it's also really probable that it's also part of a coping mechanism. Edward Gein is very complicated. So he would visit her grave all the time, and he would spend hours just mourning and weeping at her grave. And it's very sad, actually. So whenever someone would mention Augusta, he would just start, quote, blubbering out of control. And the residents of Plainfield would feel pity on him, and they would invite him to dinners, and they would always offer him condolences. He preferred to be alone, but he would take time to go and socialize. But he preferred to be at home, where he felt the presence of his mother. Because he missed his mother, you know it's not going to end good. So 18 months after his mother's death, 41-year-old Edward, he went to her grave, and he proceeded to open up her casket and twist off the head of her corpse. So he took it home and he attempted to shrink it, like all the books he was reading about, right? So to shrink a human head, the skin has to be completely removed from the skull, and then it gets put into boiling water, which causes the skin to shrink. It's disgusting. However, I read reports that the ground conditions in that area of Wisconsin are very sandy. And when ground conditions for, fun fact, ground conditions when it's very sandy for caskets, they fear that it will collapse the coffin. So this is an issue. So to prevent this, some graves are covered in concrete, and this is to prevent the collapsing into the casket. And it's apparently true for Augusta's grave, but you guys, it's not confirmed. So Edward Gein did have multiple shrunken heads in his house. So ponder that one, you guys. Because in all honesty, nothing says motherly love like a keepsake. And yeah, I love my mother, but I couldn't fathom the idea of keeping her flesh decapitated, shrunken head in my house. Yo! I just realized today's my mother's birthday. Oh, wow. Well, happy birthday, Ma. I'm recording Edward Gein. I will dedicate this episode to the love of my mother. Mother, I love you not as much as Edward Gein loves his mom, because that's just weird, but I adore you, boo. She's 48 today, so Mom, I know you're listening, so you can go to sleep at night knowing that I have zero intention of plucking your skull like an apple stem after you die. Happy birthday. All right, so Edward is having visions which are causing him to lose his mind from the loss of his mother. Now, we're going to watch him spiral, and it's very interesting because psychologically, he will go into a, quote, daze-like phase. And the brutal things he will do to the bodies involving blood won't bother him, because as I said before, high volumes of blood made him faint. But his schizophrenia actually allowed him to disassociate his thinking and not particularly recall that. It was a quiet night in late 1947. Edward was sitting in his home reading the local papers. With curiosity, he flipped to the obituaries. He ran his slender finger down the dry paper until he stopped on a middle-aged woman. She had died a couple days before. A small twitch perked at the corner of his mouth. She resembled his mother, Augusta. A lot. He loaded up his shovel and made his nocturnal visit to the Plainfield Cemetery. Edward found the fresh grave and dug down to the casket. Using a crowbar, he pried it open, and his eyes fell upon the corpse of a woman who exactly resembled his mother. Edward Gein then went to work. Edward would stay up late at night and read the local obituaries. If a woman resembled his mother died, he would then proceed to grave rob the site, taking everything he wanted, from limbs to entire bodies. Edward would then take the cadavers back to his home and peel the skin from the corpses. He would use the skin to create gloves, reupholster furniture, and create masks. But I will focus on the specifics later in the story. Over time, people in Plainfield started going missing. On May 1st, 1947, 8-year-old Georgia Weckler disappeared without a trace, leaving no suspects, and the only clue that was found were tire tracks from a Ford vehicle. Edward Gein, coincidentally, also drove a Ford. On November 1st, 1952, Victor Bunk Travis, age 42, and a friend, Ray Burgess, disappeared with their car after spending hours at the local tavern in Plainfield. Again, no trace of them or their car was ever found. While kidnapping men was not an MO for Edward Gein, the police eventually ended up suspecting that he had some role in their disappearance. A year later, on October 24th, 1953, 15-year-old Evelyn Hartley was abducted while babysitting. Her father found signs of a struggle, including her broken eyeglasses, bloodstains, and footprints. Her panties and bra were found 2 miles southeast, and 4 miles further, a bloody pair of man's pants were found. Her body was never recovered, and it's speculated that Edward Gein was also responsible. Lonely Edward Gein only ever left his house to get supplies and groceries. He would also visit his mother's grave and go to the local tavern. He would pull up a stool at the bar and make small conversations with the 51-year-old bar owner, Mary Hogan. Edward could not get over how much Mary Hogan resembled his deceased mother, Augusta. Both women were business owners, had strong independent beliefs, boisterous, and physically tough. The only difference between the two women was that Mary was openly flirtatious and sexual. If Augusta were alive, she would forbade her son from even associating with her for that reason, as well as the fact that she was a woman. But Mary was very kind to Edward, and this created mixed signals inside of his brain. He developed a crush on Mary, and he knew that his mother would have never have approved, but she also wasn't there to disapprove. On a late evening on December 8, 1954, Edward entered the tavern near closing time. The place was empty and Mary was working away behind the bar. And as she turned around, Edward drew a .32 caliber pistol and shot her directly in the head. Her body dropped to the floor. He picked up her body and loaded it into the back of a sled. He pulled it home, and once he was inside, he hung her body up and dismembered the corpse. He kept her head in a paper bag and burned the body parts he didn't need. The next day, a local man named Seymour Lester entered the tavern and seen the trail of blood leading from behind the bar to the back parking lot. Located close to the scene was the .32 caliber pistol, and the disappearance of Mary Hogan was a mystery. No one ever found the body. The authorities already had a piling list of missing persons in the area with no witnesses. According to reports, a man named Elmo Ewick had a lighthearted conversation with Edward about his crush on Mary. Elmo insisted that if he tried dating her, then he could marry her. Edward responded by saying, quote, "She's not missing. She's back at the house." 3 years had passed since the murder of Mary Hogan, and Edward continued his bizarre lifestyle. Although 51-year-old Edward was self-isolated, he did get out of the house more often. He even made some friends, most of which were teenagers but with the same mental capacity as him. One male friend in particular was named Bobby Hill, a 16-year-old who spent a lot of time with Edward. Together, they would go to basketball games, and Edward would even let Bobby go into his house. He then would show him 2 preserved heads. Edward then explained that he got them overseas from a cousin in the Philippines. Much later, after Edward Gein's arrest, Bobby Hill had an interview with the Arizona Daily Star, saying, quote, "The time Mary Hogan disappeared, people would joke with Edward about it. He would say, 'Sure, I did it.' Whenever there was any crime anywhere, Ed would confess to it. Everybody thought it was a big joke." Okay, I want you guys to get on the same page with me here because we are about to wormhole like nobody's business. So I found an article, and this article made me go into my own little speculation corner, and I want you guys to join me, okay? So Edward met a woman by the name of Adeline Watkins. And although the exact details of their romance are very one-sided on her part, 50-year-old Adeline told the Madeira Tribune that she almost married Ed Gein. She claimed that they dated for 20 years. She described Edward as good, kind, and sweet. But when he reportedly proposed to her on February 6, 1955, which was also their last date, apparently, she explained, quote, "That night he proposed to me, not in so many words, but I knew what he meant. I turned him down, not because there was anything wrong with him, it was something wrong with me. I guess I was afraid I wouldn't be able to live up to what he expected." So stay with me here. Hear me out, okay? So I personally think her story is kind of a load of shit. but here's why. So up until I decided to research articles on Edward's sexuality, I stumbled upon two articles that basically say the same interview with Adeline Watkins from 1957, after Edward was arrested. Not at any point did I find anything on this woman prior to wormholing his sexuality, which doesn't mean that they did in fact not date. They could have dated. I just personally don't think her entire story adds up. Adeline claims that she is in love with Edward Gein after his arrest. So she was in love with him this entire time. And the media is going crazy because, as I will explain later, once he gets arrested, nothing like this has ever happened in America. So it is a media circus. So not at any point does Edward talk about this woman before or after the arrest. So it's one-sided. She claims that they had a 20-year relationship. 20 years! You'd think that if it went on that long, I would have easily found something on this woman, correct? So you'd think that if a man was with you for 20 fucking years and allegedly proposed to you, it would be common case knowledge, which it's not. Now let's do a timeline dissection. Adeline said that Ed Gein proposed in 1955. So subtract 20 years, that brings us back to 1935 when Edward was 31 years old. At 31 years old, both of Edward's parents and his brother were still alive. So stay with me here. Let's say Edward was able to sneak around and see her when he wasn't obsessing with his mother and she wasn't watching him like a hawk. The 1957 article reads how Adeline's mother detailed that Edward was, quote, polite and respectful, who always had her home before 10 p.m. Now, we all know about Augusta, so you're telling me that not at any point over the supposed time frame before she died, that her nosy ass never found out. I think it's a little fishy. I may be overstepping here, but I personally think that she might be a star chaser. She wanted a little bit of fame. I don't know. It's speculation on my end. I just thought I would bring it up with you guys because it's kind of interesting. She only ever explained their dates in very little detail, and it just seems far-fetched in my eyes, and Edward never mentioned her. We all know I like to play devil's advocate sometimes, but that's only because I'm very open-minded to all possibilities. So I dug a little deeper into this Adeline Watkins woman, and I found another outside source saying that they went on two dates, not 20 years, two dates. And on the second date, Adeline started discussing not liking the idea of living with her mother for the rest of her life, and it turned Edward off and he ended it. Now that kind of makes more sense, right? It's all around strange, and Edward seemed way too interested in his own relationship with his mother to have a secret relationship with a woman for 20 years. It's the 20 years thing that's really thinking me she's full of shit. Because Edward, he did ask women out, but all those women resembled his mother. And they were older. Let me tell you, little lady, you do not look like Augusta Gein. So it's just all around weird for me. So if you want to do some background searching there, Fear Cult, Adeline Watkins, check her out. In November 1957, Edward walked into the local International Harvest product shop, owned by 58-year-old Bernice Warden. Edward had been attracted to Bernice since she too resembled his mother. He even asked her out, which she politely rejected. Edward then went to the shop to scope out the best time to make his attack. On November 16th, Edward entered the store and asked to buy half a gallon of antifreeze, which he purchased, and Bernice wrote out a receipt. Edward took the paper and walked out to his vehicle. It was hunting season, so all the men in the small town were out hunting in the forests. Edward then walked back into the store and asked Bernice to see the rifle that was hanging on the window. As soon as she turned her back, he shot her in the head with a rifle. He put her in the back of his vehicle and drove back to the farm. At this time, Plainfield was a ghost town since everyone was out hunting. Deputy Frank Warden, the son of Bernice, showed up to the store. He seen the blood on the floor and that money was gone from the cash register. When the sheriff arrived, he noticed the rifle on the wall had been put out of place. The officers had no idea what was going on or where Bernice was. They then found a receipt and were in complete disbelief. The receipt was made out to the gentle and shy Edward Gein, and they thought he would have been the last person to see her. The officer sent out a warrant for the arrest of Edward Gein and found him having dinner at a local family's house. Another group of officers drove out to the Gein family farm, where their lives were about to completely change for the rest of their lives. The sun had fallen and the farmhouse was black. The Gein residents had no electricity, therefore the setting had an eerie ambiance. With flashlights, the officers attempted to enter the house, but couldn't because the front door was locked, so they made their way around the back. They found the extended shed of the house, and they entered. Tripping over the garbage on the floor, they realized that this was going to be very difficult. One of the officers aimed his flashlight at what he believed to be an animal corpse. As they inspected closer, they seen it was the decapitated corpse of Bernice Warden, hanging upside down by the ankles, with the legs spread apart. The body was slit from sternum to pelvis. The officers made their way into the Gein household. It was absolute chaos. Searching the house, the authorities found the true house of horrors. The remains of 12 human heads, the head of Bernice Warden and Mary Hogan in bags. Located in the refrigerator were multiple body parts. Chairs were upholstered in human flesh. A pair of lips on a drawstring for a window shade. A lampshade was made out of skin and a human face. Skulls were on Edward's bedposts. Body parts and faces were hung above his headboard. Waste baskets made of stretched skin. A necklace of 5 tongues on a string. A jar of human noses. A box of female vaginal vulvas. Some were even hand-painted. Human bones made into cutlery. 9 masks made from dead female faces. The masks included the entire face, hair, eyelids, with eyelashes and eyebrows. A belt made out of female nipples. Gloves made of skinned corpse hands and fingers. Flesh purses. Human skin dresses and corsets made from flesh sewn together. He had skinned a woman's legs completely to create a pair of leggings. One of the most disturbing was an entire skin vest made of the female's skin torso, complete with breasts and full back. Edward revealed to the police that he would put on the female skinned leggings and then the female chested vest. He then continued with the human flesh corset, which he claimed accentuated his figure. He would dress in normal female clothes or skin flesh dresses and finish by putting on one of the 9 female skinned masks that he made. Edward would then walk around his property dressed as a woman, trying to be his mother. As you can see, the books that Edward was so keen on reading definitely fueled his reenactment fire, and his imagination went crazy. Here is where the psychology gets very complicated. So Edward's emotional development was stunted due to his mother's controlling isolation. So Edward was never able to develop mature complex emotions such as empathy on a higher level, and therefore he couldn't understand the consequences of his actions, and he was compared to a young teenage boy inside of a man's body. So Edward was a form of necrophile who didn't think he was doing anything wrong since the bodies were dead and nobody wanted them. And this is a common belief among necrophiles. And Edward did not have sexual intercourse with any of the corpses. He did admit to masturbation. He said that the smell of the corpses was overbearing to sleep with. So he stayed a virgin until the day he died. He started robbing graves in 1947 after the death of his mother. So when Augusta was around, she was there to monitor him. And after her passing, he was free to act upon any creative fantasies that he had, which, due to his codependency on his mother, was to find a way to bring her back to life, because in a sense, she was his identity. She controlled him in every way. And without her, he didn't know who he was. This part's truly interesting. Psychiatrists understand that Edward's desire for the female body was a manifestation of his attempts not to be his mother, but discover a replica that he can keep forever. And Edward suffered a deep internal hatred for his mother that was overshadowed by his obsessive worship of her. So these rooted feelings became manifested by killing innocent women who resembled Augusta, and then trying to recreate her with the corpses. It's so dark. Isn't that crazy? So, was Ed Gein a cannibal? No, he was not. He never consumed any human flesh. Was Ed Gein a necrophiliac? This one's a little complicated. So, he never had sex with the bodies because they smelt, and this seemed to be his reason why he didn't.
but he did get sexually aroused by cadavers when he was digging them up. So sexual fantasies, yes, classifying him as a subtype of necrophiliac, but he wasn't a full-on fledged necrophile. Did Ed Gein actually want to become a woman? So psychiatrists first and foremost understand that he had feminine qualities, but his purpose was to recreate the feelings of having his mother around since he failed to bring her back from the dead. And Ed Gein said to the police that he believed he could raise his mother from the dead using bodies from dead women as hosts just through his own willpower. And his mother raised him to think that if he tried hard enough, he could raise the dead. So when he failed to do so, he began creating women shells to wear to represent his mother himself. Psychiatrists from the Minnesota Multifaceted Personality Inventory indicated that Edward Gein had feminine masculine attributes, but he never referred to himself as wanting to be transgender. None of the reports profiled him as trans, and neither did Ed Gein himself. He just wanted to feel close to his mother. He did have an interest in the concept of a sex change, but he never fully said he wanted it. Dealing with grief is difficult for even the most psychologically healthy people, and Edward was out of his depth with his grief, and he had been isolated for such a long period of time that his own thoughts and overwhelming feelings got to him, and he eventually just snapped. When the residents of Plainfield heard the news, everyone was completely shocked that the quiet Edward Gein had been the culprit. The search of the farm had lasted over a week, and every item was recovered. The public flocked to the farm to get a peek inside of the windows of the house. The town was in utter disbelief, and the media circus erupted from the news. Edward was taken into police interrogation, where he confessed to the grave robbing and the murder of the two women. Edward referred to his state during the crimes as a daze-like haze. The police initially did not believe that Edward had the capability to dig and exhume the bodies that he claimed. Edward was then given a lie detector test, which confirmed his stories. The police went to all the graves he confessed to find that all of his statements were correct. In November 1957, Edward Gein was to stand trial for the first-degree murder of Bernice Wolden. On November 21st, Edward Gein pled not guilty by reason of insanity. The psychiatrist diagnosed him with schizophrenia and that he was clinically psychotic. He was sent to the Central State Hospital indefinitely. On March 30th, 1958, the Gein farm and personal property were scheduled for auction, but were mysteriously destroyed in a fire during the early morning hours. The residents of Plainfield suspected arson due to the community not wanting to be turned into a morbid museum. Edward's Ford vehicle was purchased for $700 by a carnival operator who charged patrons 25 cents for a photo with the famous car. Edward Gein spent 11 years in the psychiatric institution until he was deemed fit to stand trial for the murder of Bernice Wolden. The trial lasted only a week and Edward was found guilty, but due to his insanity, he was sentenced to life in the mental institution. Dr. Helen Morrison was the legal psychiatrist at the hospital, and she worked with Edward during his incarceration. She said, quote, "When I was asked to go over and see this person, I went over to see and I saw Ed Gein. He was not at all coherent. He was such a little person that I found it hard to picture him as the one who committed all these homicides. He lived there very peacefully. He never caused any problems, never had any type of behavioral thing or consequence for bad behavior." Dr. Helen Morrison goes on to explain the stark contrast of how well-mannered Edward was in the hospital versus the horrific details of the crimes. Dr. Morrison received a letter from a girl who used to be a friend of Edward's. She explains that when she was a little girl, she remembers going to Edward Gein's house many times, and he would serve soup in bowls. These bowls were discovered to be real skulls from the victims, leaving the bottom of the skull as the bowl, complete with the teeth. Everyone thought they were fake at the time. On July 1984, Edward Gein died of lung cancer at 77 years old. He was buried next to his mother Augusta in Plainfield, Wisconsin. Author Robert Bloch, who wrote the novel Psycho, lived only 35 minutes away from Plainfield and said, quote, "I knew very little of the details concerning the case and virtually nothing about Gein himself at the time. It was only some years later, when I was doing my essay on Gein for The Quality of Murder, that I discovered how closely the imaginary character I created resembled the real Ed Gein, both in overt act and apparent motivation." He was the inspiration for Norman Bates in Psycho, Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs, and Thomas Hewitt in the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. All of them absolutely great movies. And I have this strange pity for Ed Gein. Everything he did was terrible, so I don't condone anything that he did. But he got too much of the wrong love from the wrong mother, and it's always the fucking mothers.
There'll be more, many more. They're coming for me now. And then they'll come for you.
Now, on our never-ending quest to find great, truly scary horror movies, I have one that's not actually scary, but the concept is so good, and it's actually realistic, so I think you'll enjoy it. It's the Canadian 2012 film, American Mary, and it stars Catherine Isabel, and she is a horror scream queen. You know exactly who she is. She's played Ginger in Ginger Snaps. She was in Freddy vs. Jason. She was in See No Evil, the Carrie remake, and Snoop Dogg's horror movie Bones. If you haven't seen Bones, that's a pretty solid film too. I wouldn't recommend it as like a scary movie, but at least to say that you've seen it, you know? The list goes on. So in American Mary, she plays a medical student who starts performing black market obscure body alteration surgeries to pay for her school. And shit goes down. I highly recommend it. I do not have a horror short for you this week because I watched a bunch and couldn't find one that I wanted to recommend. I didn't find any really scary. So yeah, I guess you're stuck with the 2012 film American Mary, which is really good. So I hope you enjoy it. I tried to scare you, now you try to scare me. Send me the horror movie recommendations that you'd like me to check out. Here's a reminder, I have seen a plethora of horror movies, which is why I do the never-ending quest to find an actual scary movie. So when you recommend me to watch a movie, if it's moderately popular to very popular, then there's a 99.8% chance that I've seen it. So take that into consideration when you send me your recommendations. Or if you just want to tell me about a horror movie that you enjoy. Because if I've seen it, I'll tell you. So if you're listening on Spotify, Apple, Google, or Good Pods, rate. And it's fantastic to hear from all of you. So follow Lullaby on Twitter, Instagram, Slasher, YouTube, at Lullaby the Fear Podcast. So sweet dreams. Lights out.
Witchcraft. The occult. Extremist beliefs. Murder. Tune in to Rogue Darkness each Friday and join host Raven as I uncover horrific crimes committed under the misconceptions and misunderstandings of witchcraft and other belief systems. I'll cover a wide range of crimes involving ritualistic killings and extremist beliefs to cult persuasion and supposed possession. Anything and everything that borders the line of horrifying. There's always three sides to a story. Side A, side B, and then the truth. Let's uncover the truth together and explore the darkness of mankind, one crime at a time. Available wherever you get your podcast fix, simply by searching Rogue Darkness.